Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio, a student-operated, non-commercial radio station. KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixlr.com/KUST-radio.
Welcome to The Medium, a new podcast presented by Tommy Media that's all about what's happening in the art and entertainment world. On today's show, we sit down with St. Thomas professor Elizabeth Wilkinson, a member of the local band Wilkinson James. We will also be discussing this year's Met Gala with our director Solveig Rennen, and we will be catching up with the latest news in art and entertainment.
Now we're going to kick it off by talking about the Met Gala. It was this past Monday, May 6th. It was the 71st anniversary. And the theme was Camp, Notes on Fashion. And today we have our director, Solveig Rennen, with us to enlighten us a little bit on what camp means.
Well, first of all, I love the Met Gala, and I love this theme. This was such a good theme. Basically, it's based off of Susan Sontag, I don't know how to say it, but her essay from way back called Notes on Camp, and basically what camp is what us kids would call being extra.
that's a good way to describe it.
I thought about it a lot, it, yeah. And I think that's the most succinct definition. Got it out there. But yeah, I don't know. I think it was a really, really cool event this year.
Mm-hmm. There was a quote from that essay that basically says it's the love of the unnatural, of artifice and exaggeration. Mm-hmm. And to me, as an outsider not knowing much about the Met Gala, it always seemed like a very exaggerated event, but this year especially, if that was the theme.
This was much more heightened.
Exactly.
Exaggerated. Yes.
Because the Met Gala has always seemed like this celebration of art through fashion. And I think it kind of is directly that. It's always been who can... Not really a competition of who can go all out, but it is everyone trying to go all out.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone trying to fulfill the theme as best they can. And this year, the theme was to go nuts. So I think it was really exciting. There was a lot of people there who are usually really do well, like Blake Lively or Rihanna, mm-hmm. and they were both gone, which was so sad. But I think there were some dark horses that really stepped it up. Kacey Musgraves, for her first Met Gala ever, and she dressed up like Barbie. She had this long, long blonde wig. She had pink lipstick. She had a pink leather dress, like big pink fur, a hairdryer purse. It was
a hairdryer
chef's
purse.
Chef's kiss. It was incredible. Wow. It was beautiful. It was my favorite outfit, I think.
That was something I noticed when flipping through all the pictures. The color pink
a lot of
was
pink.
Very prominent. Like the runway red, was pink, yep, the mm-hmm. pink
the
roses.
Pink carpet.
The pink carpet, yeah.
The like entryway had these huge pink flamingos decorating. It was crazy.
Does that have anything to do with camp?
I think pink is a campy color.
In general, it's bright, it's in your face. Yep. It's mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I assume that correlates well with camp.
I think it's the campiest color. Yeah, no, definitely. But I loved it.
Now, I was reading, and apparently camp kind of started as this expression or kind of association with, like, homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And that kind of went into what the Met Gala was going for. Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier, and you said that someone was, I forget the
yes.
name of the celebrity.
Yes, oh, my God. Yes, okay, Lena Waithe. She is an actor and writer on Master of None, that Aziz Ansari show. She's incredible. I love her. But she came dressed in a two-piece suit it was pinstripes, and mm-hmm. the stripes were lyrics of songs that drag queens usually perform to. Cool. And then on the back it said, Black Drag Queens Invented Camp.
That's really cool.
Which they did, you mm-hmm. know. So mm-hmm. as Reed said, it's like was really like drag queens are the epitome of camp. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought it was really important that she pointed that out, obviously, in such a cool and interesting way.
Giving credit where credit is due.
Exactly. Yeah, because yeah, obviously, not all the attendees are drag queens or gay or anything.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Doesn't mean you can't support it though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought it was really funny because RuPaul, probably maybe arguably the most famous drag queen of them yep. all, mm-hmm. came and everyone was like, He was wearing, he didn't even have a wig.
It
he
was
wasn't
so
in drag.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, RuPaul, this was your time.
This
moment was made for
you.
Yeah,
exactly. It was literally made
but
for him.
Maybe the campiest thing is for him is to not be camp. Ooh. I don't know. You got to
go against the grain. Yeah.
So campy, it's not camp.
Exactly.
Ooh. Yeah.
You can definitely see in some of the fashion that they do that it is working more sometimes to other gender norms or even just more androgynous in the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, I know one look that I remember was Harry Styles, but it was a very feminine look, and he got his ears pierced for it. But in this setting, like, that's totally normal, but I don't see why what he was wearing can't be worn outside, because he wasn't one of the more extreme looks, but it was still pushing it and going along with what this camp theme really wants.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think that's definitely Harry Styles does so, I mean, all the time he kind of pushes the gender norms and dresses, you know, not so traditionally masculine.
Definitely.
Which I think is so cool. And, like, obviously, he's still super hot. Like, I love him. But I think it's really, really, it's super impressive to see men dressing more feminine than they usually would have. And I think it's his outfit was so cool.
Definitely.
He only had one earring in.
I know.
What a power move. Two earrings? Not today.
He had rings in, like, every single finger. Oh. I'm like, that. Perfect.
Beautiful.
I love it.
Amazing.
Now, you said you had a favorite outfit. Was your favorite celebrity out there?
I think Kacey Musgraves was my favorite outfit. I mean, I love her as a person and a singer, too. She might have been my favorite. But I also, you know, I also really liked, I'm going to butcher her name, but Lupita Nyong'o.
Oh, yes. Oh, I love her.
This huge afro with these gold picks in it. And, like, her dress. Oh, it was beautiful.
I mean, she's amazing.
It was incredible. Yeah. I think it's fun when it's, like, people that you already love. And then it's the double,
supporting something
well.
You also love, yep. And it's like,
it's
yes.
incredible.
Yeah.
There were so many disappointing people, though. Like, I was like.
I mean, can you name any?
Call them out.
Yes, I can.
Please call them out.
Okay, well, first of all, I don't know. There's so many, like, models who come, and I'm like, you're just dressed so boring. You are around cool fashion all the day. You should do better. I thought that I was disappointed by Miley Cyrus and her husband, Liam Hemsworth. He was wearing like a black suit, and I was like, come on.
That's boring.
I think the biggest disappointment is when men come and their date, the woman usually will dress like beautifully, and then they'll just wear like a suit. It doesn't have to be like that. Mm-hmm. Joe Jonas and Sophie Turner, newlyweds.
That was great.
We're like in coordinating, I'm going to forget. I think it was Louis Vuitton, but I don't quote me on that. But they were in just these incredible, colorful outfits, and they were both dressed up versus just like her wearing a crazy outfit and him wearing a normal suit. So there is room for men to dress up too.
I know. I saw a picture of Cole Sprouse.
Yes.
And
yep.
His outfit greatly improved, because last year it was just like a simple suit. And then this year, makeup and hair and the
when
outfit.
When men wear makeup, it's so fun.
It's so fun, exactly. I feel like this whole event is surrounded by just having fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you don't, you're like, well, why'd you come? Like, you had the chance. You should have taken it.
It's not meant to be taken so seriously.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's supposed to be an expression of art. Mm-hmm. And that is usually associated with fun or, you know.
Definitely.
Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen, boring. They didn't even, nothing. They looked nice, but like.
Right. Ugh. I gotta give a shout out though to Zendaya as Cinderella.
That was
epic. She left a slipper on the stairs.
She commits.
Yeah.
I saw a tweet that was like, if Rihanna's the queen of the Met Ball and the Met Gala, Zendaya is the princess.
Like,
yep. She does well every year.
Definitely. Well, Solveig, any other comments that you have about the Met Gala, or maybe what you're looking forward to the next Met Gala?
God, I just love it. I think it's so cool. I first went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art when I was like 15, and I like fell in love with it, and I saw like the Costume Institute, which is the whole point of the Met Gala, is to open the Costume Institute every year.
Right.
So I'm super excited to see what the next year's theme is, and to see what is actually in the exhibit is also incredible.
Mm-hmm. Do the costumes go...
It's the same theme.
It's the same theme through
but it's not the same clothes as like what people wear.
Okay.
So, it's really cool. I'm excited for next year. I think it'll be fun. I don't know. People criticize it because it's like, you're spending less money on clothes, like there's people dying in Africa, et cetera, which, you know, obviously that's still an issue, but I think it's okay to enjoy frivolous things like this and watch celebrities look crazy on the pink carpet.
The pink carpet.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and we're here now with Professor Wilkinson.
professor here at the University of St. Thomas.
I am.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And feel free to call me Liz.
Liz. All right. Well, thank you. So I think we're going to start out. Just, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your music?
Sure. So this is my 11th year at the University of St. Thomas and my 11th year in Minnesota. I moved here from North Carolina, which I don't know. Do I still sound like I'm from North Carolina?
Just a bit.
A little bit.
We'll get you to that Midwest.
My O's are starting to sound Midwestern.
Yeah.
I think the more I on stage, I sound a lot more Southern, which is kind of interesting.
But it's
kind of
cool.
Yeah, history appropriate, I think. Yeah.
I moved here from North Carolina, and I'm originally from Virginia, and my family's from mostly Virginia, South Carolina, although my dad did grow up in Ohio. And so, I was there doing my PhD at UNC Greensboro, and I had a band there that I loved, and the life of an English professor, you got to go where the job is. And so I only vaguely knew that Minnesota existed,
as most people do. Yeah,
like, pretty far
vaguely,
north.
Yeah, north and west of where I was, and so then I ended up here, and I had kind of a magic band experience in North Carolina, and I thought I would not find it again. You know, it's a sort of a beautiful lightning strike when you find the perfect band. And so I left North Carolina thinking that maybe my music was done. And then when I interviewed here at the University of St. Thomas, one of the professors asked me that, if I got the job, what would make it difficult to move to Minnesota? And I think they know that they were anticipating me saying, oh, the cold or something of that nature, right? Like, and I'm like, well, I have this band. And little did I know that the professor to whom I was speaking played guitar. And had his own solo shows that he did. And so, he was like, a band? And so then, I don't know if you know how these job interviews go, but they're like 2 days long. And
Wow. Yeah,
they're intense. They're just, kind of mind-blowingly intense. And so, I ended up getting the job. And then when I moved up here, he gave me a call. He's like, hey, do you want to come over and jam? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know any of y'all's songs. And he's like, well, I went online and I kind of know all of your songs. And I'm like, all right then, nice. I'm, honored and freaked out a little for musically stalking me.
Yeah.
And, but no, he was so funny about it. It was really, and now we love to tell that story on stage. People ask all the time, and how'd you get started? And that was it. And so really within a month, we were playing out together. And he's the more prolific songwriter of the two of us. Mm-hmm. And so he started writing songs for two voices right away, and then songs just specifically for my voice. And and now, we started out just as a duo, and now when we play full, we're a 7-piece band, which is pretty awesome.
That's pretty cool. What instruments do you have in the band?
I usually just do lead vocals when we have the big band, because we just have such great instrumentalists. Mm-hmm. And I can play guitar and bass, but I'm not that great. So I just leave that to the experts. So we'll have rhythm guitar, lead guitar, bass. We have a guy who plays saxophone who's just sublime.
That's fun.
We have dobro. We have a woman who she just started playing fiddle for us, and it's just so good. And we have a guy who plays drums for us, but often he'll just sit on the cajon. Do you know the cajon?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically just a box. It just looks like a wooden box, but great drummers can get unbelievable sound out of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Look up the cajon on on the interwebs. And so most of the time, Jeremy will just play on the cajon. But we're going to play a 3-set show coming up. And he's like, my hands can't take it.
<He's> like, it can be pretty brutal having you do that every song.
It's so physical. It's definitely really physical. And we have one song that we almost always do near the end of our second sets. And we give everybody solos, and we'll throw a solo to him on cajon. it's pretty bizarre and wonderful. Yeah, but it, by the end of it, he's just like, oh, he's shaking his hands out. He can't. Yeah. Anyway, was that enough?
That's perfect.
Wonderful. Yes. So do you ever write any? It sounds like you don't write any of really your own songs, but have you ever dabbled in that? I mean, as
Actually, we do. We do almost all originals.
Okay.
The band is almost. We do some covers just because it's fun for people to hear covers, you know, and they love that. And we'll do some sing-alongs, but we got two albums out, and they're all originals, of course, and. I'm much more of a lyric writer than laying down the chords. And so, I've written maybe 4 or 5 songs since I've lived here, which is kind of pitiful. I did write a lot more song lyrics when I was in North Carolina, mm-hmm. but it was kind of just the way that band worked. So I was playing with 3 other guys. And so we would get together to practice, and before we even started practicing the songs that we knew, they would just noodle around, you know, and they'd be just jamming, and I'd sort of just be hanging out, mm-hmm. and I couldn't help but start writing song lyrics to the stuff that they were jamming on. And so that's how the songwriting happened when I was in North Carolina. But up here, so AJ, it's AJ Scheiber is the guy who, started the whole thing. And I guess people know him here, you know, Dr. Scheiber or Andy Scheiber, but on stage he's AJ Scheiber. But anyway, so he had been writing his own songs for so long that, you know, it's not a real collaborative effort when he does his songwriting. Like, he'll write the song, you know, the lyrics and the music, and then he'll bring them to me, and then we'll tweak them a little bit. You know, so for me, it's more of maybe a very slight editing once I get his songs. And so I think also, you know, the pressure of being in a new place, having to get tenure, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. A lot of my energy went into that sort of creativity rather than songwriting creativity. And now that I have tenure, I can relax a little bit, and I've been doing a little bit more songwriting. Mm-hmm. And we actually do run, you had mentioned before we started recording, where do these hats that I wear intersect? Now that I've mixed my metaphors. We go almost once a year to a conference called the Delta Symposium, and often we'll both be presenting academic papers at this symposium, but because it's in the Delta, it's also a blues-oriented thing. And so they ask us, the people who run the symposium have asked us a couple years running to run a songwriting workshop. Which is really awesome. Yeah, so we run a songwriting workshop down there. And, of course, it's right outside of Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And so the people that come to this writing workshop are just stellar. It's just such a great creative.
Imagine. Yeah,
it's so wonderful. And the last song I wrote came out of that workshop. I was, you know, supposedly running it for other people, but I was, like, writing my own stuff at the same time. So mm-hmm. it was super cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, a blues song called Underwater.
Underwater.
Yeah.
So that's a blues song. Are most of the songs and stuff you play bluesy, or is there a little mix of genres there?
Yeah, it's kind of the beautiful thing. You know when you go to a show, and even if the band is stellar, if all their songs start to sound the same, you get a little zoned out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the beautiful things about our band is that we have so many different influences that I think our sets are really interesting because each song sounds novel, right? Cool. It sounds new. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard to put a label on what we do because it's definitely singer-songwriter stuff. It's definitely Americana, but sometimes we'll lean hard into even country-sounding stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you put a fiddle to anything, right? And
gives it a certain tone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Or a dobro for that mm-hmm. matter, right? But then we throw in saxophone, and suddenly we're leaning into big band almost, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and like breathy torch songs, you know, and things of that nature. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, we get we it's a wide variety.
I'm sure with
stuff.
The multiple instruments that you guys have, you can kind of add and subtract those instruments from song to song, like whatever feel you're going for, and that gives you a lot of flexibility, I'm sure.
Well, and I think, so to go back to the songwriting aspect of things, so AJ is a stellar songwriter. He is so good, and he is able to channel different genre. And so, you know, he'll throw me a song and it'll be Patsy Cline, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he'll give me something else and it's just, you know, I can't think of another, you know, another female, I don't know. It'll be like Joan Jett, I don't know.
Right? Sure, like, sure.
Yeah, right? And it just is, he's able to create the framework so that then I can play with my voice.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Are there any bands or artists specifically that have inspired you guys as a group or even you individually? Or is it really all over the place drawing from anything?
Are you ready for more stories? How much time do we have?
You're good.
Keep going.
Feel free.
Y'all can just cut out whatever you don't need. So my mom and her sisters... were professional singers back in the 1950s.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, the Hill Sisters. So there were six sisters total. The oldest four sang professionally. They fronted big bands and, you know, sang live at dances and things of that nature. They had briefly their own radio show.
Cool.
And they also had a regular spot on a TV variety show. And so, yeah, absolutely my first... And always inspiration is my mom and her sisters.
Aww. That's beautiful. Wow.
Yeah. And in fact, it's so cool. Gosh, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, my folks were up here visiting. And Johnny D, who used to adjunct teach for us here at St. Thomas in the business department, he also was a DJ on KFAI.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so you know Johnny D?
I've heard of him.
Well, so he, I told him my mom was going to be in town, and he said, well, let's have y'all on the show. And so he brought me and my mom on his radio show, and we... like sang her songs from the 1950s and we sang my songs from present day.
Wow.
And I know it was great. And then same thing for our second album release. We had it at the Astor Cafe in St. Anthony, Maine. And my mom and dad came and mom came up on stage and sang with me, which was so cool.
That's a cool connection.
Yeah. And we also still have like their show, radio show from 1955. My mom's 19 years old.
Dang.
And it's like the coolest thing to hear my mom at 19 years old on her own radio show, right? Like talking and singing. And yeah, it's really cool.
It's cool that you still have like the copies of that
and
can go back to it.
We don't have any of the TV variety shows, which just kills me. I would love to see
my
that
God.
Footage.
Definitely.
Like, it's got to be somewhere, but I don't know. We don't have it. But, I mean, back in the day, right, they just, like, taped over stuff, and it was literal tape, right?
Yeah.
Like,
Can't even imagine that. I mean, not digital? Oh, geez.
Reed, you're spoiled.
Back in, you know, us old folks, man, we had it hard.
Making mixtapes off the radio.
Oh, my gosh.
You never did that?
Never.
What? You got to do it for the experience.
Come on, man. Reel to reel's coming back.
Exactly. The vinyls are coming back.
Cassette tapes.
Just wait for the VHS to come back. I'll be ready.
I got my old Scooby-Doo VHSs ready to go.
Boom. Yeah. You're already ready.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
oh, dang.
Thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it. And
sure.
It's been wonderful.
Yeah. We love to get a professor in here from time to time. We had a student last week, so getting that whole range is really great.
Want to get that variety.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. That was awesome having Dr. Wilkinson in with us. It'd be cool to go check out their playing with their band just in all these little places that they have, and their shows are listed on their website for that.
Alrighty. This week in entertainment and art news, Avengers Endgame. For those of you who don't know, Avengers Endgame is the culmination of 22 previous Marvel movies. It is currently breaking box office records after making $1.2 billion in its first weekend. It's quickly making its way to one of the highest grossing movies of all time. The film has currently grossed $2.2 billion. What do you think of that?
That's pretty ridiculous, honestly. Ridiculous. 2.2 worldwide in 1 week? Are you kidding?
Yeah. No, it's crazy. People expect it. For those who don't know, the current highest grossing movie of all time is Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
That's the James Cameron with all the blue people.
Yeah. I guess that's a good way to describe it.
Yep. And people are expecting Avengers Endgame to quickly dethrone that movie, which has held the title of highest grossing movie of all time for...
Since it came out.
Since it came out, yep. It's been like that for a decade now.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Stuff. It's interesting, though, because Avatar was a single...
Standalone movie.
Granted, James Cameron was coming off of Titanic, which everyone knows is... also a high-grossing film.
Interestingly enough, the reason why it accumulated so much... Well, first of all, it was a very popular film.
Right, right. It's well-made.
Yeah, but everyone was told that it needed to be seen in 3D. And 3D 3D movie tickets are significantly more expensive than regular movie tickets. So that's how it grossed a huge amount of money, because people were seeing it in 3D.
Interesting.
Yeah, that and it was an incredibly popular movie.
Right, yeah. Right. But nonetheless, Endgame still... Right. An achievement based on this whole universe that they created, and what I've heard from the fans of them, it deserves all the accolades it's getting. Deserves the attention.
I'm speaking as a fan right now. Holy cow, is that movie amazing. It is, yeah, it perfectly wraps up the previous movies. It is. I believe it's worth the hype.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, next our news. The 73rd Tony Awards will take place on June 9th, 2019. Nominees were announced on April 30th for all the categories, and James Corden will host the award show for his second time, with his first time being a few years ago in 2016 for the 70th anniversary, and his opening number for that ended up earning an Emmy Award. And I gotta say, I've watched that opening number more times than I can count.
I'm not aware of this. What is it?
It basically, well, so 2016 was the year of Hamilton. It was huge that year.
Okay, yeah.
And so it starts out with him, it starts out with the main actors from Hamilton, but the verses are reworded to fit the show and to fit James Corden.
I see.
And then he comes out in the part where it's usually like Alexander Hamilton's first entrance, it's him going, James Corden. And then it is like 6-7 minutes of just reworked lyrics from popular famous shows to fit what he's talking about and kind of make a joke and have fun with it. Then there's a big dance number at the end, and then it ends with like all these kids coming out on stage, but then they're replaced by the nominees, and it's like this whole anyone can do it, anyone can make it to Broadway, really just a celebration of the theater.
Wow.
And it's quite the production. I highly recommend everyone goes and watches it, because I'm sure this year he's going to have something equally amazing for this show.
Yeah, that's. I'm going to go watch that right after the show.
You should. And everyone knows James Corden. He's a Tony Award winner himself. He's got the Late Late Show, and he does so many musical things on there with Crosswalk Musical.
He really is a gifted entertainer, really.
Definitely.
He's a great entertainer.
He's so sweet, and so I'm very excited for that.
All right. Well, next up in news, the trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog was released. A lot of people weren't excited about it. So there was extreme backlash for the trailer because it showed the iconic video game character Sonic in his new design, and it looks nothing like the original design. The internet was not happy with that. In fact, the backlash was so negative that the director released a statement saying that they were going back and actually redoing the entire movie because the design was so unappealing. It was literally, people were so unhappy with the design of Sonic that the director said, I will go back and redo the design for Sonic throughout the entire movie. I don't know, for those who don't believe this is a big deal, that will cost countless hours and huge production costs just for that one fix.
Sure.
This may actually like double the budget of the entire movie because of that.
I imagine so. I mean, one, shout out to the internet for persuading enough to get that changed. And two, essentially they're redoing the whole movie. That's the title character. He's going to be in the majority of the film.
Yeah, he's got to be in at least 70% of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. There was one movie, I think it was actually The Conjuring 2. When that came out, there was a thing where the nun character in that movie, they didn't create her until a month before it released into theaters. And that was just a directorial decision. It was not because of any backlash or anything. But this is different, where now the audience that's going to go see it is expecting a new version. Yeah. Whereas that, people didn't know that they had changed that character until after it was released. But this, there's a lot more pressure now to get it right a second time, especially with all the extra cost and hours to do it.
Yeah.
This will be interesting how that turns out.
Yeah, exactly. And I believe it's the release date is, I believe, November. So they have a kind of a short amount of time to mm-hmm. make these major changes. It'll be interesting to see what comes of it, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And our last bit of news for today is the It Chapter 2 trailer released May 9th. And the movie is set to release on September 6th, later this year. Part 2 follows the Losers Club 27 years later, with a new batch of actors portraying the adult versions of the characters, some like James McAvoy and Jessica Chastain, who you can see in the trailer itself. And the appearances of the younger actors will most likely be there, not only in flashbacks, but some new clips as well. And it's highly anticipated after Part 1 in 2017, which got 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb and an 85% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, I'm extremely excited for this movie just because I'm a big horror, scary movie fan, but also because they left it at a good spot. Part 1 was pretty good. It was pretty scary, good developed story, and it'll be interesting to see it set apart as the young kids and now the old kids, whereas the 1990 version and the book are like a split go back and forth between the young and old.
Right, yes.
So it'll be cool to see how they do this now as just like the older characters.
Now, I'm curious to see how this goes. Yeah, like you said, I love the first one. The first movie was fantastic. Mm-hmm. What I'm a little concerned about is that for the first movie, I feel like they kind of wrapped it up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It's not explicitly said, but the clown or it appears to die.
Pennywise,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Pennywise appears to die at the end of the film. Spoiler alert, although it is 2 years old now.
I think you're allowed to spoil it at this
point. Yeah. The children all have kind of a nice goodbye and then they mm-hmm. go their separate ways. It's kind of a nice wrap up. So I'm curious to see how that works out
mm-hmm.
In the second one. I think in the 1990 version, however, they also believe that it died and defeated it, and they all went their separate ways kind of happily. I did air quotes for those of you who
can't see it, but he did.
But I'm curious to see how this works as a sequel.
Right.
I have faith in the director, and the cast itself is fantastic. I have a lot of faith in that, but a sequel of this kind is definitely going to be interesting mm-hmm. to see.
Well, and part of the story is that when they all move away, they forget what happens in Derry, which is fine. And I think they'll be able to work that in. What I'm more concerned for is how scary or intimidating even is Pennywise going to be in the second film? Because even in the first one, after there was a few jump scares with him in there, I was like, all right, we've kind of seen him. He doesn't have the same amount of fear factor, at least for the audience, as it does the characters. So how they're going to rework that into this movie, I'm not sure. They might have to get a little more creative with how they use him as the resemblance of fear, essentially.
Right.
So how that plays out, I think will be interesting. But like you said, great cast of characters mm-hmm. and actors that they have for it. The first one was good, so I'm hopeful. I'm going to keep hope. And I remember seeing a tweet, I think, from Stephen King, and he said it was pretty good. And if you get the author's approval, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'll trust him on that.
All right. Well, this has been the second episode of The Medium. I'd like to thank Professor Wilkinson again and our director Solveig Rennan for coming in and speaking with us, and we'll catch you later.